Hi, you're listening to the weekly podcast of Life Ministry Church. For more information, head to our website, www.lmc.org.au.
Church, what a blessing it is to be able to share the sermon with you today on this wonderful Father's Day. And it is a bit unusual because essentially I am Zooming live to you guys, which is a bit of a shame I can't be with you in person, but it is exciting nonetheless that we are still able to come together and celebrate this wonderful day and continue this series on the character of God. And before we go to that, I just want to talk a little bit about my Father's Day so far this morning. I've been incredibly blessed to be showered in gifts this morning by my beautiful daughters and my wife, and I just want to share some of these with you. I got possibly one of the nicest articles of clothing that I now own. Look at that. That is a tie that Violet has made, and, you know, step aside, Armani. That's what you want to be wearing. So, that, you know, the next formal outing I go to, I know what I'll be donning. And for all the LMC men's basketball team, you know, we had a difficult season this season. We couldn't play a lot of basketball. But rest assured, the trophy cabinet is still going to be one up this year. Look at that. World's number one dad. Popping that one straight in the cabinet. So that's an absolute ripper. So it's good to double my trophy collection today. And last but not least is, well, it's actually not last, it's second last, is, and you know, again, for, you know, Chris Blacker and Hamish Woodcock, if you're at home, this could be a gift idea for your birthday. We've got the men's manicure kit. Look at that. All the items you need to keep those hands and those spirit fingers nice and nice and going. And then last but not least, Chris, hate to tell it to you, mate, but I think I'm actually Superman. And again, not biased in any way, shape or form. So that's a new mug for the office. But it's great to be with you again on Father's Day, as I said before, and such a privilege to be sharing with you today on the character of God. Now, obviously, we've gone through the previous four parts of this series over the previous month or so, and we started with compassion from Pastor Andy. We had loyal love from Nicole, grace from Pastor Graham, and then again, we had faithfulness from Pastor Andy. And last but not least, I'm going to be talking to you today around being slow to anger. And this again comes from Exodus chapter 34, verse 6 to 7, bringing it up on your screen. The Lord passed before him and proclaimed, the Lord, a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness, keeping steadfast love for thousands, forgiving iniquity and transgression and sin, but who will by no means clear the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children and the children's children, on the third and fourth generation. The English translation for slow to anger are long-suffering and not lightly angry. But the literal translation in the Hebrew is erekapayim, which translates into long of nose or long nostrils. I can't help but think that Andy potentially chose me for this one for some strange reason, but I'll just keep staring at you on this one, not give you my side profile. We see that erek is long, and this is what it's interpreted into. And we see similar interpretations in Ezekiel, 2 Samuel, and Psalms. And apayim, which is the second part, is nostrils or nose, and again repeated in Genesis. Why is long of nostrils associated with anger? See, a common Hebrew phrase that means to become angry is, and his nose became hot. This appears 56 times in the Hebrew Bible. So the hot anger relationship is formed with God's character, and the anger of God is a burning, but his nose is long, so therefore the patience is in the build-up. Shown in Numbers chapter 11, verse 1, Isaiah 5, chapter 5, verse 25, and Deuteronomy 6, 14. So in short, the bigger your nose, the slower you are to anger. And you can think about this as in when you're frustrated or you're irritated, your nose scrunches up, you get a bit hot in the face, and that's what happens when you're angry. And so by having a long nose, you've got a more sustained draw into that point of anger. And that's what this Hebrew is interpreting it as. When you've got a long nose, you are slow to anger. And God's anger is talked about as being a burning anger. Not so much a flash, but a slow burning to that anger point. Mm. And so as I said before, the bigger your nose, the slower you are to anger, metaphorically speaking. So perhaps having a big nose is not a bad thing after all. As I was unpacking this, it still did kind of make me a little bit uncomfortable. Let's be honest. The thought of our all-powerful, all-knowing God getting angry in any way, shape, or form is a scary prospect. But from a worldly perspective, associating God with anger does work into the world's misconception of God. This white-bearded, imbalanced, distorted old man in the sky that casts lightning bolts down on the evil and exerts his anger over humanity is quite often the narrative. But this Hebrew interpretation serves to oppose this image, because while God's anger burns, it's a slow anger that reflects the compassion and grace of God. He is slow to anger. So what does God's anger mean, and how does that interpret? Perspective is super important here, because if we have a true standing with God and an intimate relationship with him, we can distinguish the type of anger that we commonly relate to as mere mortals. Because how can a merciful, gracious, loving God be possibly angry, slow or not? So there are two types of anger culturally that we experience and likely frames our earthly understanding of anger. And we'll see this on the slide. The first is anger as protection, more of a psychological. When something we feel we value feels threatened, compromised or lost, a deeper feeling that generates an anger response. Let's call this a righteous spiritual anger for this sake. The second is an anger as an abuse, more sociological. It's a sign of losing self-control. And when it's expressed by someone quite often in a position of power, can be used to bully, threaten, intimidate, and manipulate people into compliance or submission. Let's call this a selfish anger of the flesh. So when we view God's slow anger, it's always a righteous spiritual anger, representing of his love for us and his concerns for, and he concerns himself deeply for what is best in our lives. To use an example, I've got two beautiful daughters, Hazel and Violet, and I'm often teaching them safety lessons in the hope that it will be in the best interest of their welfare. And on this one occasion, myself and Violet, my oldest daughter, were at home alone, and I was working in the shed doing man things, and Violet was somewhere in the front yard. And we've got a fairly well-fenced property out the front with a latched gate. And I said to Violet, "Violet, you must stay in the front yard and I'll come and check on you every now and again." Violet nodded her head and agreed. That sounds pretty simple. After checking on her a few times, I then went back the third or fourth time and I couldn't find Violet. And the gate was ajar. I started freaking out. I ran out to the front lawn, checked all the corners under the bushes. I couldn't find her anywhere. I ran down the staircase onto the driveway, yelling her name, carrying on like a lunatic. Meanwhile, my mind is just ticking over. Has she been abducted? Was she hurt? Had she gotten lost? How far had she wandered off? I ended up on the front nature strip trying to find her somewhere on the property or even at the front. Unfortunately, I couldn't find her, but then I saw and heard something in the front of, at the front of my car in the driveway, and she was actually hiding behind my car in the driveway, and I wasn't able to see her. When I finally got to her and had a chat to her and expressed how angry I was with her, but how relieved simultaneous I was that I'd found her, I remember having that duality of emotion. I was angry, but I was compassionate and happy that I'd found her. And in a way, that's kind of like God when he thinks of us.
Yeah.
It's an anger based on our welfare and our goodwill. We see a similar engagement with the Israelites as it affects their relationship with God, as they continue to test and be disobedient to God's plan, commands, and blessings. And God is slow to anger in his direct response. The Israelites tested God multiple times with his patience. And we read this right through Exodus and Numbers. In Exodus 16, they paid no attention to Moses. Exodus 16 again, they disregard Moses regarding the manna. In Exodus 17, they complained and grumbled about the water. In 32, they made the golden calf. In Numbers 11, they raged against God. Numbers 11 again, they grumbled even further. And then in Numbers 14, they refused the spies' good report. We see multiple times where the Israelites were testing God's anger, not listening to his instructions and his blessings. And then finally, God responds in Numbers chapter 14, verse 11. The Lord said to Moses, "How long will these people treat me with contempt? How long will they refuse to believe in me, despite all the signs I've performed for them?" Repeatedly, God had demonstrated his faithfulness in each situation of difficulty. However, as soon as Israel encountered another difficult situation, they evidenced unbelief, through their grumbling and complaining. Even considering this, God remains slow to anger in honoring his promises and really not destroying them.
Yeah.
God proves that his slow-burning anger is underpinned by his faithfulness, graciousness, compassion and love, and these are interlinked in the passage in Exodus. So what's our response to a God who is slow to anger? Ephesians chapter 5 verse 1 to 2 tells us that we should emulate God's example and walk in his ways.
Yeah.
In essence, we too should be slow to anger by emulating his character. We should also have long noses. There is no shortage of things to be angry about. Angry at the pandemic and its impacts to health, livelihoods and liberties. Today is a frustrating time in history. And these environmental impacts have amplified the stress and pressure that presents a perfect environment and scene for anger. We can certainly be tested during these times, and it's really easy to justify anger. But there will always be things that test us, pandemic or not.
Yeah.
A while back, when our kids had just come along and we were having one of our first family holidays with Nicole, my father-in-law and mother-in-law, an exciting time. And whenever it came to holiday and travel pre-kids, I was an absolute minimalist. If I was ever traveling for business or ever traveling, you know, with Nicole, I would dumb down what I'm carrying. I would never carry any more than I absolutely had to. And at all costs, avoid checking in your luggage. That's what slows you down at the airport, right? And so getting ready and prepared for this holiday, I remember Nicole had all the luggage open out in the bedroom on the bed. And I walked in, Nicole being very organized as she always is, and she had everything all compartmentalized in the luggage. And I remember looking at all these things, thinking, how much stuff is this? This is ridiculous. There was breast pumps in one corner, about the size of a soccer ball. There was a whole bunch of toys, a playmat. There was bottles,
nappies,
everything. Bags upon bags of stuff, just all perfectly put in these luggage compartments. And I realized there and then that the days of traveling light were over. We were about to take the kitchen sink and some with us to this holiday. And so as we got to the airport, we were there, and the first thing you've got to do, or one of the things you've got to do, is you've got to unfortunately check your pram in. Now, that oversized line is full of two people that are just looking forward to their holiday, surfers and golfers. Then there's a third type of person, that's the dads, with their prams. They've packed those prams up best they can, fold them over, glad wrap them, put some ties around them, whatever they can do to minimize that pram to make sure when they get to the other end, they're not missing half of it. And so I'm in this line processing the pram, and then after which we're getting through checking in our luggage, our carry-on or our hand luggage rather, and I get to the clerk and we start processing our luggage and we start getting it weighed. Anyway, one of our luggage pieces, the larger one, goes onto the scales and the number comes up and the clerk looks at me and says, you're actually overweight, and that normally attracts an additional surcharge. And I said, oh, gee, really? I wasn't aware that was going to be that heavy, to be honest. And she said, that's okay. I'll tell you what, I'll let it go. But at the other end, you better sort it out because you don't want to get stung on the way back. Really nice grace moment by the clerk. And I thought, that's fantastic. And so I made a mental note. We got on our plane and we had a beautiful flight and a lovely holiday. But that whole time I'm thinking to myself, I've got to minimize that luggage footprint on the way back. Whatever happens, I'm not paying that surcharge. And I remember scheming with my father-in-law, Eddie, about it. And then we finally got to the D-Day where we were going to pack up our things. And we got all of our luggage out on the bed again. And we began to divide up all of the articles. Breast pump here, bottles there, playmats and toys, etc., etc., nappies and so on, including our own luggage. And Eddie and I were fairly happy with how strategic we were with the outlay of our luggage. Everything was nicely organized. We even got ourselves a little hand weigher, and we weighed every single bag, and we were happy where it sat from a weight perspective. And I was convinced that we were going to get one over the airline on the way back. Well, we got to Maroochydore Airport, and I thought this was now a man's task to do this luggage processing. And so Eddie and I went to the director, the clerk, and we began to process our luggage and check it all in. Nicole was off to the side minding a couple of the kids and keeping them civil. And as we dealt with the clerk, he seemed like a nice young man. We began to weigh our bags. Anyway, we got to one of our larger articles of luggage, and it went onto the scales, and we were watching with great anticipation for these digits to come up on the digital scales. Lo and behold, it came up and it was heavier than when I weighed it back at the hotel. And I thought to myself, there's got to be some kind of mistake. Your scales must be broken. And the clerk looked at me. This is a mental dialogue I was having at this stage. And the clerk looked at me and he said, oh, look, unfortunately, you're over. And I looked at him and said, that can't be right. I just weighed this back at the hotel and it's actually within, you know, the parameters of what you guys suggest. And I spoke to the other clerk back in Melbourne and she said that would be fine at that weight. To which he answered to me, well, I wasn't in Melbourne. How should I know? Now, I'd be lying to say if this didn't trigger me just a little bit. With my father-in-law to my left, very rational, balanced, non-emotional man, and me standing in front of this clerk with a very intimate attendance of people at Maroochydore Airport next to me. Nicole was still off to my right, and I began to get into, let's say, a discussion of semantics on whether or not this piece of luggage was overweight. Back and forth, and I began to get more and more angry. And it wasn't slow to anger, it was fast to anger, kind of like a rocket taking off. And as I got more and more animated and irritated, I got to the point where we were having this argument on the floor. And Eddie intervened and said, Aaron, how about I just pay for it? To which I said, Eddie, it's not about the money, it's about the principle. And we began to do this dance further. You know, we got to the point where I had to pay for that luggage to get on the plane because Nicole, at one stage, I heard a noise to my right. And it was Nicole notioning to me, Aaron. That's her way of saying, just let it go. And I let it go. You know, the thing about anger is it can impact those around us. It can ice over a room. I was once reading a book and heard one of the mantras from the Navy SEALs, which is calm and contagious. And that always sat with me because I think in direct opposite to calm is contagious, anger can really affect the room and it can affect you as a leader. It doesn't matter whether you're with your kids, with your family, you're dealing with a neighbor, whether you're watching your leaders on the news, or you're dealing with your boss or your colleagues or employees, or even if you're in traffic, potentially you're watching social media or the news. Anger can affect those around us when we interact in that way, particularly when we're not slow to anger. Are we exercising self-control and perspective on these matters in our lives, these things that potentially are triggering us in our day-to-day? What fruit is our anger producing? Psalm chapter 37, verse 8 says, let go of anger and leave rage behind. Do not get upset, it will only lead to evil. You know, studies suggest that anger creates energy surges in your body. And adrenaline enters the bloodstream, your heart rate increases, and your blood flow increases, and your muscles tense. It can even shorten your life if sustained, some studies suggest. Getting angry can actually inhibit smart decision-making and even cloud judgment. I recall when I was about 10 or 11 years old, and I grew up with five brothers, or six of us in the household, and it was a hectic place. And a lot of the time, we were encouraged to make our own fun. And that was quite often outside for obvious reasons, so we didn't destroy my mother's house. And I remember this one time, my middle brother and I were down in the local park playing during summer, and we were playing some sort of game. I forget whether it was sport or just a little bit of hokey. And at one stage, we were mucking around and an argument began, you know, potentially on the outcome of a game or some sort of a competition challenge of some kind. And as we began to argue, the verbal argument progressed to wrestling, and we found ourselves in the middle of the park wrestling each other on the grass. And things began to escalate and we're trying to really get one over each other. And I remember being on top of my brother and to the right, I saw a dark shadow on the grass. And I want to do a disclaimer here and caveat this story by saying that kids, if you're at home right now and you've got siblings, don't do this. Don't fight with your siblings for starters and don't do what I'm about to do. And in the corner of my eye, I saw a dark rock, what I thought was a dark rock to my right. And that was that shadow that I saw before. And I could feel myself getting angry to the point where I was getting a temper flare up. And in that moment of bloodlust, I reached for that dark shade to grab that rock for a real Cain and Abel moment. And as I reached for that rock, I squeezed my hand on that rock with all my might. And as I squeezed, the rock squeezed between my fingers. You see, this wasn't a rock. It was a ripe, fresh dog poo. And as I sat there on top of my brother with this poo hand, looking at my brother and my brother looking at me screaming at my hand, my brother laughing at me, he got up, kicked me off and laughed as he ran out from the park home. And I remember walking home on that hot summer's day with my poo hand, thinking to myself, my decisions need to change. That was not a smart idea to try and hit my brother in the head with a rock, and now I was paying the price for it. You know, quite often when we lose our temper or we get angry, it can be regrettable. Quite often we are foolish when we have lost our temper or we are quick to anger. And often we regret the decisions we make while we're in that state of mind.
Yeah.
Ecclesiastes chapter 7 verse 8 says, "Do not be quickly provoked in your spirit, for anger resides in the lap of fools." You know, today's world is an angry world. It's full of blame and no ownership. And it's essential as Christians that we respond in the right way by looking to God for example. To be slow to anger, even when there is injustice or we are wronged.
Yeah.
To be wise in our decisions and what comes out of our mouths. Let's be slow to anger in every interaction, in every encounter, whether that be big or small.
Yeah.
So how can we be slow to anger? Well, Ephesians chapter 4 verse 31 says, "Get rid of all bitterness, rage and anger, brawling and slander, along with every form of malice. Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as Christ forgave you." So here are some practical tips on how to manage anger and be slow to anger. Surrender it to God. When you feel yourself moving quickly to anger, give yourself time, reflect in prayer, and don't act upon it. Sometimes even taking a break for something that may be triggering your anger is the best way to go. Choose kindness and compassion even when you don't feel like it. Avoid triggers that potentially are making you angry. Social media, maybe it's time to switch off. The news, if something is causing you to be angry on a regular basis, maybe it's time to take that out of your environment. The Bible talks that if the left hand causes you to stumble, you should cut it off. In the same way, if we've got things in our lives that are causing us to be angry, maybe we should remove them. Now, I want to be clear, if your kids are making you angry, you still need to stay with them. Don't go removing them from your house, but you understand what I mean. We've got to find the tools to manage our anger if it's happening frequently and if it's happening quickly. This morning, man, I want to challenge you as well around you being fathers in your household. It is so important that we lead by example. And today is a good day to take stock of how we are as fathers. You know, I had the privilege of going to the men's camp in the middle of the year, and it was wet and it was cold, but we had a fantastic time. And on the big night, the Saturday night, I believe it was, when Chris was delivering the word, he talked about what your legacy was and leaving a legacy. Mm. And I often think about these things in reflection on Father's Day. And Father's Day in the past 5 years has become one of my favorite days of the year, because it's a good time to take stock and think about what legacy we're leaving
yeah.
as dads in our households.
Good.
Whether we're going to be remembered as a quick to anger dad or a calm dad that makes smart decisions, that leads by example during difficult times like we are in now.
Yeah.
And so my challenge to you and to me is to be better dads and be slower to anger.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not easy when things are tough. It's not easy when we're up against it like we are now. But it's in those moments that we lean into God,
yeah.
and it's through God's power, not ours, that we lead by example and emulate his character.
Yeah.
So this morning I'd like to pray for everyone and close off this morning and this character of God's study, which is essentially slow to anger. Lord, I just give thanks for our church, Lord. I just give thanks for the blessings that we have to be able to have a church community. And Lord, to be able to even get together online, Lord, as much as we'd love to be face to face and in the flesh, Father, I just give thanks for the blessings to be able to meet freely together, Lord.
Mm.
But also as well, Lord, I just pray right now that you would watch over every man,
yeah.
every woman and child in our church, Father, and that you would challenge us all equally, Lord, to be slow to anger and emulate your character. And as we've studied each characteristic, Lord, in Exodus, I pray that you would challenge us to be more like you, Father. And that we would not try and do that in our own might, but that we would do that through our understanding of you, Lord, and our relationship with you and your power, Father.
Yes.
So I just bless everyone today, Lord, and particularly the dads on this momentous day, Father. Bless our dads, Father, and watch over them, Lord, in Jesus' name. Amen. Thanks, Andy.
Amen. Thank you so much, Aaron. Yeah, Aaron, Nick, give him a hand. Come on, you'll be... Yes. That's all right. Mate, thank you so much. What a brilliant message that was, hey, church. And I asked Aaron when I spoke to him about this sermon a couple of weeks ago and we were just talking about it. And I was talking to him about which angle to go with. You know, we look at God being slow to anger and that being an amazing thing to look at. We study the word, we study about God, but then there's also, and he spoke about it, the emulation of us in the second half of the message. And I thought he did such a brilliant job of leading us and helping us unpack who God is and also our own response to who God is as well. And so we thank you so much, brother, for being obedient to God on that and delivering such a great message. You are a great man. And do you want to, Hazel is here. We can cross back if you want. Hey, guys, wave, say hello.
Yeah.
So thank you, mate, and happy Father's Day to you. You are a great man and a great dad, and we really appreciate you so much.
You too, Andy. Thanks, mate.